Okay, gentlemen and world, today's daf in Masechet Ketuvot brought to you from Yerushalayim, Ira Kodesh, is daf Samach Aleph. We're holding on the bottom of Samach Omud Beis, the Mishamsha Be'rechaya. So we were talking about issues that have to do with destroying the milk of a woman if she gets pregnant, or what kind of things she's eating might ruin the milk, and the question of whether she can get married again if she's nursing, or whether her new husband is not going to take care of the baby, and so on and so forth. So meanwhile, we talk about the effects, just like we talk about the effects of pregnancy on milk, we talk about the effects of pregnancy, except that here we go back actually to the moment of conception, and we say the mishamshim. Now, these are all sort of segulas kind of things. And remember, please, as ridiculous as these things are to us, remember that the entire nature of immunity, illness, and the way in which people experience reality is extremely culturally specific. I mean, to the point where it's absolutely hilarious. And there, I mean, there's serious, serious articles that explore this kind of thing, about how insane one's culture's concerns and beliefs are to another culture. I mean, do you believe that there are entire countries that are paralyzed by the fact that people will steal your genitals in the street? This is serious stuff. People who steal genitals can be sentenced to life imprisonment. Now, I mean, that's absolutely insane. But there are, this is what they experience. And this is, there are serious articles on this. Explore this in terms of the context bichlal of the way that immunity evolves and the relationship bichlal to different pathogens and so on. So the component of psychological belief is so powerful that, as Tosis points out, do not pay any attention to the things that the Gemara says about, he says you're not even allowed to. What the Gemara says about trufot and things that are cures, and it's in terms of our own times, it's absolutely insane. But this is what was expressive of a particular way of relating to the world, and therefore there's no objective way of discussing it. I mean, if you spoke to your own great grandmother, I guarantee you that she would describe to you as mine did to me, illnesses that are insane, that nobody ever heard of. Some of which actually show up in the Gemara, but I swear there ain't no such thing. Anyway, you know, I just sit there trying to keep a straight face, which wasn't too problematic because she was blind anyway. All right. Anyway, Rabbosai, so we're starting with the Mishamsha Be'rechaya. So a woman who has her sexual relations in a mill, so then the children who come from that, if she conceives, will be epileptic. The Mishamsha al Ara, if she has intercourse while she's on the ground, Havila b'nei Shamuti, so then she'll have problems, children with problems with their neck muscles or their neck bones. The Dorcha al Rama or Dama, the student of Lashonis here, the Chamra, if she stepped over the blood of a donkey or excrement of a donkey, Havila b'nei Girdani, so she'll have children with skin problems or hair problems. The Ochle Chardala, now this makes a lot of sense, this next one. If a woman eats mustard throughout her pregnancies, her kids are going to be eating hot dogs their whole life, and because of that, they're going to be Zalzalani. So they're only always going to be, they're always going to be looking for delicatessen. That one I can definitely hear, right? The Achle Tachli, if she eats watercress, she's going to have kids with dolphin eyes. Exactly, bunny dolphani, which means that they'll have eyes that sort of watery. The Achle Tachli, the Achle Munine, she eats these little fish. Havala bunny mitzitze enet, kids are going to be blinking all the time, probably means. The Achle Gagushta, she eats clay during pregnancy, which happens actually sometimes because of calcium deficiency, that people are just pressed to eat things that contain calcium. Havile b'nei michoari. By the way, this is something that affects children very often. Not getting sufficient calcium. Not anymore, because there's no more actual plaster almost in most places. But it used to be that the kids would actually pick the plaster off of the wall and eat it. to make up for missing calcium. So it's incredible what the body is able to actually pinpoint as being a nutritional necessity. The shata shichra, if she drinks a lot of beer, she's going to have, this was the story with her papa, you know, when they made fun of his kids. Oh, the reason, you know, you need to treat to use all of these skin things because they drink so much beer. The akhla bisra v'shata chamra, and if she eats a lot of meat and drinks a lot of wine, that's going to make her kids healthy. So that's barya. The akhla bay, she eats a lot of eggs during pregnancy. Avile b'nei enani. It's going to develop their eyes to look eggy, maybe. The akhla kavre, eating fish. Fish, as we know from Yosef, give you chayin. That's the yidgula rov. So she'll have bonim chananini. The akhla karpasa, eating karpas, celery, havile boni ziftani, she'll have shiny children. The akhla kuzbarta, havila b'nei bizrani. Eating too much kuzbara is going to get your kids fat. And the akhla etroga, havile boni rechoni. If she eats esrogim, then she'll have kids that smell like esrogim. We know someone like that. So at last we figure out why. I actually wrote him yesterday, you know, 50 years ago when you smelled like an esrog. Take a look at the daf yomi. Now you'll know why. Brate d'shvor malka, akhla ba ima etroga. And sure enough, the mother of Shvor Malka's daughter had eaten a lot of esrogim during her pregnancy, and they would bring the baby out, and on top of all of the other good smelling things, they would put the baby. So because she smelled so good, so she was there beresh all of the reichani. Omer Vuna, anyway, getting back to the question of nourishment, nursing, which all of this is noge, obviously it was only brought here, agav, to that whole inyan. So Omer Vuna, Rav Huna Bar Chinuna gave us a bechina, and he asked, what would be the din if she says, I want to nurse, and he says, I don't want you to nurse because it's going to mess up your figure, and who do we listen to? So the din over there is, for sure, he introduced the question by saying, Shom in la. There for sure we listen to her because if she wants to nurse, tsara didahu, not nursing is painful. So she's going to have engorged breasts, and that's her problem, and therefore you can't tell her what to do. But how about the opposite? How about if she doesn't want to nurse, and he insists that should nurse? So he's got this whole thing about mother's milk, being clear, he doesn't want to pay for a nursemaid, whatever, so mao. Now, again, it's quite clear that kol hecha de lav urcha, where it wasn't her minhag in her family to nurse, so then, of course, the saw earlier that when you bring in a wife, it's on the understanding that it's going to not make her less chashuv than she was. So if her family was high class and they considered it to be too low class to do your own nursing, so she does not have to nurse. And in that case, shom in la. But what about if it's the minhag of her family, yes, to nurse, but it's not his family's minhag? And in his family, they would always hire a nursemaid. So what would be the din? Bata didei azlina, no bata didei azlina. So here was the question that he asked us on the bechina. Do we go according to his minhag, or do we go according to her minhag? Now, this would have everything to do with people from, let's say, Antwerp that get married. So do we treat them with that high-class Antwerp approach, or do we treat them with the human approach? It's the question of whose minhag we would follow, right? And he asked us this, and we gave him a great answer. Ola imo ve'eno yoredet imo. A woman always goes up with her husband and does not go down with her husband. So therefore, if she marries lower than her station, so then she's not going to go and follow his low-class minhag. But if she goes and marries someone who has more chashuv lifestyle, then she goes up to his lifestyle. Om Ravuna, we see this from a pasuk, because when it says in the Torah, v'hi bu'ulat ba'al, it's a funny way to refer to a woman, isn't it? Bu'ulat ba'al. I'm like, why in the world would you want to say things that way? And you say she's a married woman. So bu'ulat ba'al is a remez to ba'aliyato shel ba'al. A woman always goes up with her husband, not down with her husband. Velo biridato shel ba'al. Rabbi Elazar says, I have a fantastic, much more primal and meaningful remez than that. And that is, explain to me why the name Chavad is given by Adam to his wife. Why does it say, ki yaita em kol chai? I mean, what do you mean she's the mother of all life? I mean, it's not she's the mother of all life. He's the mother of all humans, right? But the point over here is that it's merames, that em kol chai, as the mother, she is viewed as being given life for the life that she gives. And that means l'chaim nitna, v'lo l'tzar nitna. A woman is given for l'chaim and not for suffering. That's the point. Okay, next thing we had is that's l'chaim. I know what's in there, Barnea. That's no l'chaim. Oh, man. I don't know. Where are my people this morning? There's nobody who comes to the rescue. All right, l'chaim. Anyway, the Mishnah goes through what the din is when she imports into her marriage shvachot. So we go through the number of shvachot. Okay, so if she brings one shivcha, then the din is she doesn't have to do the grinding the flour, she doesn't have to do the baking, she doesn't have to do the laundry, but it's mashma that she certainly does have to do everything else. We had seven things that she had to do, right? So that would mean she still has to do the cooking, and she still has to make the beds. When we say make the beds, by the way, it's important to note that there are two levels of making the beds. What we call today making beds is not what the Mishnah is referring to making beds. Making beds at the time of the Gemara was quite a complex kind of thing because you had to take things apart and put them back together again, basically. There's no room to just leave whole rooms just for beds all day long. And therefore, it consisted of some heavy-duty work of spreading mattresses and so on. That's what the meaning is in the Mishnah. Later on, we're going to talk about making beds in our sense of matzat or tamitav, just like putting down a sheet and making things look nice and so on. That's something else. And that's a more intimate activity that we'll be talking about later. But anyway, so what she would still have to do, she'd still have to do the work with the making the threads and making the beds and doing the nursing and the cooking. So why is that? I don't understand. If she brought in another woman, so why can't she say to the husband, look, all the things you were counting on me to do, there is now another woman to do, right? So let her say, v'temele eyalet lech itita b'charikai. In my place, I brought you another woman to do all those things. Why do you need me to still work? Because he answers her, I don't understand. Now we've got three people. Okay? Because she's got to live too, doesn't she? So you brought me another woman. That's all very nice. We've got a household now of three people because you brought me another woman. And what was being done before by one, namely you, that would have been good enough for you and me, cannot be done now by the Shivcha to be good enough for you, me, and her. Very simple. What kind of logic is that? As if she doesn't live here. So Mishum Da Amarla. Look, this one that you brought in, it's all very nice. I mean, she could do the work for me and for herself. What about for you? If you're not going to be doing work, so who's going to be doing all of that work? Then the Mishnah says, if she brings in two shvachot, then she doesn't even have to cook and she doesn't have to do the nursing. One second. But that still leaves us. Now, this doesn't make sense over here. So now you're talking about five things, right, that she doesn't have to do, total, from the first shift and the second shift. She's still got to make the beds, and she still has to work on making the threads, the woolen threads. So that doesn't make sense, because now why can't she say, okay, your argument before was that one person can handle two people, but that one person can handle three people, but that means that two people can handle four people. And now I brought you in two people. So those two people should handle four people, you and me and the two maids. So I don't understand, why am I still working in this house? Answers the Gemara, because he can say to her, do you understand what happens to a home when you start adding activity and maids in the house? Maybe you don't. Maybe you think, my father always warned me about this. Maybe you think that replacing a light fixture is just going to replace a light fixture. But you're wrong, because ultimately you're going to have to replace your dining room to match the light fixture, because it's, and so on and so forth. It's an endless rat race. Don't get started. And therefore, he says there, it's the same thing. It was nice when it was just me and you, and then we could have handled it. But now that the whole living style has gone up, I mean, you understand the doorbell's going to be ringing. People are going to be coming in. This guy wants to stay for a week. We're going to need a whole extra staff around here. So Mishum Da'amarla, that's all very nice. But Kami Urche Uparche Mantar, who's going to talk? Who's going to take care of the cousin that came to stay? And that's the Urche. And who's going to take care of the Parche? Just the people that are, yeah, I'm just there for a night. I'm stopping in. What are you going to say? You know, it's 11 o'clock at night. Where are you headed? Well, I don't know yet, but I'll find a place. Yeah, yeah, okay, right. We know the answer. Anyway, so who's going to be taking care of these people? Stick to the coffee. All right. So then the mission says, but she brings in three shvachot, then she doesn't need to make the beds, and she doesn't need to work with the tzemer. Now, hold on a second. That's all seven things, right? But it says only if she brings in four, then it says she's yoshevet bekatedra, that she can sit back in her TV chair, right? Okay, so then that means that the seven major things she's handled with three shvachot, but there's all the little things in life that we have to do, which we're going to see, you know, that there's all these little things that you still have to take care of. So, I mean, why can't she say three is enough to be your shevet b'katedra? So, hashara avda, but why? Temelei ayalit lechachritit. Now we've got two to take care of the four of us, including them, and one additional to take care of the people that are coming in and staying over. Because he can tell her, listen, because the more you got, the more people start coming in. So nafish b'nei beita, nafish ruchei parche. So then the Gemara says, I understand. So then it's an endless chase. So there should be no time that she should be yoshevet b'katedra. Because if you bring in four, then you've got more people coming in also. And if you bring in 100, so then you'll have concomitantly more. I mean, I don't understand. So why does the Mishnah say four? And here is a fabulous insight, which Mo Willie, I'm sure, will appreciate in terms of the business idea. And that is the tipping point of synergy. There gets to be a point where there is enough extra help that they can actually synergize their work and accomplish more. Then it's not just a matter of adding people. It's a geometrical adding. And therefore, at the point of four, we're at the point where we're handling more than the added materials that were going to be required because of the four. So, ask the Gemara, let's see inside. Iachi afilo arba nami. Once you get arba, says the Gemara, kivan de nefishilu, once you've reached that point, misayana hadadi, they are synergetically involved, and they now increase the output of the others. Oh, gosh, even Gavi's not helping this morning. I'm stuck with coffee or plain water. Ah, at last, Akiva shows up, and he also looks like he's got coffee. There we go. Okay. Very good. All right. A lovely idea, no, Mo? Nah, not getting a Mo this morning. Oh, there we go. Okay. Omer Rabbi Chana, Vitem Reb Shmuel Bar Nachmini, that when the Mishnah says she brings in these maids, it doesn't mean that she came marching in, you know, with these maids wrapped in a cake, and then they suddenly burst out and they say, hello, we're here, or anything like that. She doesn't really bring them in. It just means, look, there's a machlokas over here, by the way, how to learn. So Rashi learns she's brought in enough money that it makes sense to buy her some maids. That's one of what she's brought in enough to cover this increase in the lifestyle. And it's others learn, even if she didn't bring it in, Ru'uya is not a discussion of her dowry. Ru'uya is a discussion of the family that she comes from. So if she comes from a lifestyle where there's going to be four maids, so then she is Ru'uya, so to speak, to be getting maids for her. So even though she didn't bring it in herself, Machlokas Rishoni. Tana. The Brite explains that when it says Yichnisalo, it doesn't necessarily even mean either of the above. Suppose she saves up. Let's say she saves up her allowance, you know, or she's mitzamtzemet from her food that he gives her, whatever. And she managed to save up enough to buy herself a shivcha. So then that would be exactly the same. Echad shetzimtzem alo mishalo, and mishala, he can also not have any times because bottom line is she worked it out and she's got the goods. And if there's Arba, then she's Yoshevet B'katedra. Then she gets to sit in her TV recliner. Om Rav Yitzur Bar Chananya Om Rav Huna. Afal Pisha Amru Yoshevet B'katedra. Even though in the Mishnah it says she sits in her recliner all day, which is mashma, that she doesn't do anything. She just sits and watches TV. That is a bad idea. And she still ought to be, and this is not a chiyuv, but this is a good advice, says Rashi. Mozeget lot kos. Look, I mean, things that are intimate, you know, if she doesn't want to wreck her relationship, she should mix his drinks for him. Matzat lo atamita. And here Rashi speaks out the difference of what we mean with matzat lo atamita as opposed to the Mishnah that's talking about making the bed from scratch. Here just means setting it up, making it pretty. I mean, who ever heard of a wife who isn't going to wash her husband, I mean, in the shower, you know, she's going to take such good care of him, his face, his hands. And every woman, of course, does that for her husband, bends down in the morning when he gets off of the bed. Yes, honey, could I wash your feet? Oh yes, indeed. Anyway, so as, you know, we all know those women. That's sort of a minimum of intimacy, wouldn't you say? Anyway, Amar of Yitzchak Bar Chananya, Amar of Huna, those things which are intimate have also implications for Hilchas Nida, because Kol Malachot Sheisha Osah LaBaala, Nida Osah LaBaala, all the things that a woman normally does would be done by a Nida as well, except for those things that are intimate and therefore could actually lead to intimate relations, and that we certainly want. We don't want to get turned on during the period of Nida. So because of that, she does not do Mizigat HaKosh. She doesn't pour his drinks. She doesn't make the bed, and she doesn't wash his face and hands and so on. Because over there, when we say that, we obviously she can't touch him. She's not allowed to touch him, but she can't even, you know, bring in the water and so on as part of making life easier for him. And those things are usher. But when we say it's usher, it doesn't mean it's totally usher. Because, I mean, to make his bed if he's not there, that's okay. It's only an intimate activity if she's doing it in front of him. And it's sort of very suggestive activity. You know, I'm making the bed ready for you. So because of that, in front of him, it's usher. So lo amri lo b'fanav, avo shelo b'fanav letlam, but we don't have any hakpada on making the bed if he's not around. And when it talks about mizigat hakos, also it's not absolute because there are ways to, even during Yemei Nida, to be mozeges hakos. And that is, watch Gavi carefully, and we'll see what mizigat hakos is all about. And that would be that she's mozeget, and it makes a shinui. So if the shinui would be done, let's say like Shmuel's wife, she would use her left hand, which is not usually what she'd be mozeget with. And that makes a very strong point of just remember that I am a surah to you because I'm Anita. So that is okay. Abaya was manchaleapuma de kuba. She would put the drink on top of something. Let's say she put a jar of pickles on the table and then she would put the drink on top of that to make it very clear that it's not a direct service. Rava's wife would put the cup, a besadia, on the pillow instead of on the couch. Remember, they used to lean on the couch instead of on the little table. Rav Papa would put, his wife would put the cup on the shavshav, on the stool, instead of on the little table. But whatever. Now, there's a very interesting side point over here, by the way, because Rashi learns that these activities are referring to bimei libuna. So bimei libuna means we're talking about where she has to wear the white begadim that she wears during the Shivas Nikiyim, which makes absolutely no sense by our standards, because there's no difference between Yemei Libuna and Yemei Nidata. Remember, the Shiva Sakiyim just continue on as part of the Yemei Nidais, Bizman Azer, where Benos Yisrael, where Yichmiru Alatzman to be Yoshivot Shiva Nikiyim. So what the heck is Rashi talking about? So basically, as it becomes clear in all of the Rishonim that discuss it, and the question of the Machzor Vitri, and then it's Rashi. At Rashi's time, they used to still go to the mikveh after Nida, the Oraisa, and then wait the Shivas Nikiyim, and then go to the mikveh again. So there really was a major difference, because after the Yemei HaNida, she became Tehora Midi Oraisa. And therefore, they were more makel on these issues. And Rashi is learning that it's only Bimei Libuna, where there would be only a Dirabana. Lamaisa, we don't do that anymore. The reason that they did it, apparently, either because they were being makbid on the inyonim of tefillah bezman mitzvah, which is a machlokas, as we know, or because they were makbid on tumah v'tayra to some extent. I don't want somebody who's metame mishka b'moshav, if it's possible to avoid that. So they changed it in terms of the deraisa. But whatever the reason was, halacha lamaisa, as Tosfos brings, it makes no difference, and it's even nogea bizman hazeh, where we're not knowing that, and it's an issur d'oraita, we still are matir exactly these same type of anhogas, shelo b'fanav, or, as you well know from your own experience with Hilchos Nida, that where there is a shinui that is made, legabi mizigas hakos, that we're matir mizigas hakos as well, and all the various ways in which we bring you lahalocha to bring shinuyim. Omrev Yitzchak bar Chananya, Omrev Una, speaking now, and we've been talking about these various things, they all came from Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Chananya, so once already we're talking about Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Chananya, let's talk about the impact of food, which we were speaking about, the impact of food in terms of pregnancy. It's not really only pregnancy. Now, we know that during pregnancy, there is a real, very serious, and sometimes even dangerous sensitivity to food on the part of a woman who is pregnant, and she can actually become endangered by having a craving. Everybody knows about this craving. They laugh about it and so on, but it's not really laughable, because the mocker of these cravings is actually very often not known to her own conscious mind, but a physical reaction to a desperate need to a particular type of nourishment that is essential for fetal development and so on. And she feels this insane need that she absolutely has got to have that. Now, that type of feeling the Gemara wants to identify is not only associated with pregnancy, and it can often actually attack people who are just on the verge of improper nourishment. And if they're suddenly exposed to the kind of food that would make the difference, they go into the state, the Gemara talks about the state of a bulimus, in which they can actually go into shock simply from suffering the sense that they have internally of not being able to get nourishment. So we're going to talk about this issue. And one of the places where this comes up, of course, all the time, is the combination of the two things that we're talking about. One, the impact of food on your body. And secondly, the idea of having a shivcha or an eved that's going to be doing things for you. Now, if you've hired someone to wait on your table, what is your chiev vis-a-vis making sure that the food that is being served is not going to impact him in a very bad way? It's obviously difficult for a person to serve other people these delicious meals and they don't get anything to eat. And therefore, there is a chiyuv of making sure that your meltzar is properly fed. So, Omer Rav Yitzchak Bar Chananya, Omer Rav Huna, look, you're allowed to wait until after the meal before you have the waiter eat, except for certain things that could affect him very badly. So I call Machin b'fnei hashamash till after the guests are out. Chutz mi basar v'yayin. If you're, there's something that has a very strong smell and also affects the way that his own nourishment is going to be sensed, you have to be very careful to make sure that you give him in advance, because otherwise he can get sick. And Amar of Chista, we're talking about over here, is basar shamein, is a nice, good, fatty steak, and yayin yashan, and some really pungent wine. And Rava says, well, yeah, the meat is all year round. The yayin yashan really only gets the body turned on during the summer when it's hot, and oh my gosh, you're smelling that alcohol, and you're... So you need to have some of that. So that's only b'tkufat Tammuz. Omer Ravana bar Tachlifa, I could tell you my own personal experience. I was once waiting on Mar Shmuel, and they brought him this incredible mushroom quiche. Oh, my God. I had to lay tafshila da arde. I'm telling you right now, I guarantee you, if he hadn't given me something to eat, I wouldn't have the nerve to ask him. He took off some and he gave it to me. I'm telling you, I would have died. He stuck me for sure. I wouldn't have made it. It's a good thing that he knew about mushroom quiche. And Rav Ashi says, well, I was serving by Rav Kahana, and they brought him this incredible turnip salad within vinegar. I mean, man. And if he hadn't given me some of that, for sure, I would have died. He's stuck me. Rav Papa says, even a nice, fat, delicious, sweet date can get somebody into trouble if he feels that he needs that. Anyway, the general rule to remember, like how to be careful, not to eat something in front of someone that could be hurt by it without sharing it, is called the eat le'recha, the eat le'kiyua. Anything that has a strong smell and has or has kiyua, and as a kiyua is a difficult word, I'm not sure how to translate it. Because as Rashi says, most people will take kiyua to mean strong or pungency, but that's not what it means. It means kiyua is the type of thing that is caused by things like vinegar. And it's something that, as Rashi says, affects your teeth. It's setting your teeth on edge. So it's, you've got this like specific type of taste. So I don't know exactly how to translate it. Yeah, exactly, because that's vinegar. But as far as identifying it in scientifically in terms of the taste buds, I'm not 100% sure like what it would register as. But anyway, that is something that can... Sorry?
It's tangy.
Can't hear you.
Tangy.
Can you spell it? What? No. I mean, that's because only one of tangy things is kiyua. People will say something is tangy also if it's very sweet, right? No? Is that called tangy? Only if it's sharp? It's sharpish sweet?
That was an American drink called tang.
Right.
It was also sweet.
It was very sweet, yeah. Okay, so maybe it was a misuse. Okay. Avua bar'i, umin yomin bar'i. Now, over here you had these two brothers, you know. One of them would feed his waiter on every single course. And one of them would feed his waiter from one of the courses so that he would, at least he wouldn't feel completely left out. And Elio Anavi would only talk with the one that had given every food to his waiter. Elio Anavi has no patience with someone who doesn't have consideration for his waiter. Now, you know, one has to wonder how much consideration did Elio Hanavi have for his, you know, Elisha. All he wants to do is kiss mommy and daddy goodbye. He doesn't seem to have much patience for these human kind of things. But okay, what can you do? Elisha made up for it, right? Bringing all the food to everybody and so on. So I can't hear you. I don't know if it's my problem or your mic.
Caused a famine for 3 years.
Yes, right, exactly. Exactly. A good point. Anyway, there were two Hasidim. So, you know, now not everybody believes they were Hasidim. It was another Girsa. They weren't Hasidim, they were Rav Chisda's children. That's why they were called Hasidim, you know, because they came from Rav Chisda. And that was actually Rav Mari and Rav Pinchas, who were the sons of Rav Chisda. And they would both feed, obviously, the waiters, but Mar Kodem Safi, Umar Ma'achar Safi. So they did give every single course, but one would wait until he finished serving the guests, and one would give it in advance. And the Kodem Safi Eliyahu Mishtaibade, the ones that were giving in advance, Eliyahu Navi would talk with them, him, but Ma'achar Safi Lo Mishtaibade, what? You'd make the guy wait? No way. Now, Amemar, Marzutra, and Ravashi were once sitting at the gateway of the palace to the king of Persia, whose name was Izgur, the king, and they were bringing in with the chef and the serving crew were bringing in all of these dishes, you know, and they were coming into the palace from the kitchens. And Ravashi looks at Marzutra, and he sees Marzutra is about to faint. The Chavar Ape, I mean, Marzutra did not have much to eat, and this stuff was coming by, and oh my God, I mean, obviously it was not kosher stuff, you know. So what he did was, Ravashi takes his finger, can you imagine the chutzpah, he takes his finger, sticks it into the king's food, and puts it into Marzutra's mouth. So the guy, the chef says, are you insane? I've said it to Lusuda to the Malka? And, of course, he calls the police. It's a horrible scene. So the cops say to him, how did you do such a thing? Amarlohu. So Ravashi says to them, are you kidding, man? Anybody who prepares food like this for the king ought to be hung. You can't feed the king food like this. I was trying to make sure that the king wouldn't eat garbage. Manda avirachi, posel amalcha damalcha. You're looking at me? I was the one who wrecked it. It's the guy who cook this. What are you talking about? So Ravashi says, look, I could see as you're walking along, there was a piece of rotten pig in there that had saras. Ah, come off it, man, they say. What are you talking about? They take it to the lab. Butku, they check the meat. There's nothing. What are you? And so they're about to hang him up. Anyway, so Ravashi grabs the guy's finger. And he puts it on one piece, and he says, right here. Did you check right there, that spot? So sure enough, they check it, and it comes out being full of tzarat. Oh, my God, so it was true. So he says to them, Hokam Nibakisu, did you check here? So they did, and sure enough, it turned out to have tzarat on it. So the Rabbanan said to Ravashi, I understand, why did you? You did something that would require a nace goloi for you to be saved, and... Like, he must be nuts. What did you do that for? Amar lehu, chazoi ruach tzarat kaporcha iluya. What happened over here is when they were passing by and I saw Marzutra sick, I saw that there was this ruach that was over him that was open to tzarat. So I figured that was a sign that I could use tzarat as an excuse. Anyway, there was this Roman guy, so he says to this girl, oh, will you marry me? And she says, no way, I'll marry you. So anyway, he brings a bunch of these pomegranates and he cuts them open in front of her. And they were very pungent pomegranates, you know. And he's sitting there discussing with her, you know, well, why won't she marry him and so on. Meanwhile, she is going crazy because she wants some of these pomegranates. She's not going to tell him anything about it because she does not want in any way, don't give me this stuff for a couple of pomegranates. I'm going to go marry you. Anyway, so she keeps salivating and she keeps swallowing everything that she's salivating with. Lo havlan, he refused to give her. He kept eating. Until she finally became so swollen that she looked like she was transparent. And she's going to die from this. So then he says, okay, girlie, how about if I cure you? Will you marry me then? Yes, I'll marry you then. Okay, fine. So then he takes some more pomegranates. And Azil Aite Rimani and Pali Velka Kamane says to her, now look, I'm going to be eating these, but this time, just keep spitting, okay? Everything that comes up, just keep spitting. Spit. And she continues to spit. Ve'itasiya. This is the Hutza Yarka we've had in so many places, no idea what it is. But anyway, this green leaf type of thing, finally she's able to spit out, and she became well. Anyway, getting to the Mishnah, Osa Betzemer. So she has to work with raw wool in order to turn it into threads. Now, this is what everybody would do. So she's the spinning woman, right? But the mashmaut in the Mishnah is that she works only with wool. Now, something is wrong because you sing every Shabbos, Dor Shatzemeru Fishtim. What happened to the Fishtim? How come only with wool? Mashma, not with Fishtim. Matnitin Mani. So who is the Tana of our Mishnah? Could it be Hevel and not Cain? Who was the one who said this Mishnah? Says the Gemara, it's going out Libet Rabbi Yehuda. Because the Tanya Inu Kofa Lola Amod Lifnei Aviv. Look, you can't get your wife and insist that she serve your father. It's your problem. You can't insist that she's supposed to be taking care of your son. That's not her son. And you can't force her to go feed your horses and stuff, lifnei behem toad, so your horses, your donkeys, but you can force her to put food, straw, in front of the cattle. Now, this is the difference of Rashi, even as some suggest that the hemto is male and Vikaro is female. He doesn't like that shot. But the point is that in front of a horse and a donkey, we don't want to put a woman. Because horses and donkeys, you may have noticed, get these horrific erections that are about 3 feet long. And because of that, they are very turned on. And they may end up putting her into a compromised sexual position and so on. So don't put your wife into such a situation. Bovines, they're like very tame. They're not turned on by human women, as Rashi says. And because of that, you can have her go ahead and feed the behemoth. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, afe nakofa lepishtan, nasot pepishtan. This is what we were talking about. Those of you who, of course, know the power of one will remember that, will remember what the name was of someone who actually would utilize the stick. Anyway, so Rabbi Yehuda Omer, he can't force her to do work with pishtan. Why? Because you have to, when you're spinning, you have to put the material in your lips to make it damp in order to get it to catch, to go onto the piece that you previously went ahead and made. And that causes, first of all, causes terrible smell in your mouth. And it also irritates the lips. And it's misharbeta tasfatayim. So you can't put your wife into a situation like that. Now, Hane mile bekitna ruma. This whole halach of Rabbi Yehuda is only nogea the pishtan that she would have what the Romans used to use for pishtan, and the Mishnah is specifically saying tsemer as opposed to pishtan ruma. It's not saying as opposed to any kind of pishtan whatsoever. Rabbi Eliezer Omer afilo ichnisa lo mea shefachot. Rabbi Eliezer says, this is ridiculous to say that she's ipikatedra. The worst thing you can do is have your wife sit in a TV chair all day long and not do anything. And that is usher to do because it's mevi lidei zima. Omer of Malkio, Omer of Adabar Av. And I know that this is Rav Malkio. As you know, we have a lot of issues every time we bring up anything from either Rav Malkio or Rav Malkia. We need to work out who said what because it's so easy to get confused. But anyway, so remember, this is Rav Malkio that we're quoting here. And he said that Rav Adabar Av paskins like Rav Eliezer. And therefore, even if there's 100 shvachot, there's no such thing as sitting in an easy chair because this is dangerous for morality. Okay, that's Rav Malkio. Now, there were other things, as we know, that were said by Rav Malkio. And Rav Malkio and Rav Malkio had various piskei halachas or pshatim that they would say on things that were brought up in a Mishnah or things that were brought up in a Braisa or things that were brought up in a shmua of the Rabbana. So, Omer of Chanina, Berei de Ravika, you should know that just to remember who said what, Shpod, Shvachot, and Gumot was said by Rav Malkiyot. So, but these are all sugyas that we've had before. The Shpod is talking about if you utilize a spit to barbecue something on Yontev, does the spit become a muktza to move? And basically what he paskin was that you can move it and as long as you do it in Shelo Kedarka. Then this sugya that we just had, which is shvachot, that even with 100 shvachot, you should not let your wife sit in a TV chair all day. And gumot, which are the gumot that we're talking about for pubic hairs, were over there. The question was, what if there are just pubic hairs and there's no hair in them, but a pubic hair pours for the hair, but there's no hair in them? Is that considered to be the equivalent of a simen, because there would be no such pores if there hadn't been pubic hairs? And Rav Malkiyot says, yes, that's a raya, that she's a gdola. That's all Rav Malkiyot. Now, the din of Belurius that we had in Aveda Zoraz, which if you're a barber, that you have to stop cutting hair 3 etzba'ot away from the Belurius, which was the simen of the being committed to an Aveda Zoraz, like today, they have these crazy hairdos that are signs of your commitment to Aveda Zoraz, all different kinds. So you're not allowed to be the barber that creates that. And the din of the Efer Mikle, and that's a halacha that if you have scratches on your skin, so they would use ash as a antiseptic, and like we do, activated charcoal, basically. But the he paskin that you're not allowed to do that because the ash leaves a permanent and indelible mark in the skin, and that is similar to the iser ktovet ka'aka. So he asered that. And then the explanation of why cheese is usher, if it's made by goyim, is because they polish the surface of the cheese with chazer fat, with lard. So those things were all said by Rav Malkiyah, whereas Rav Papa said, no, you got it wrong. Anything that was a psak about a Mishnah or a Brisa was said by Rav Malkiyah. And anything that had to do with the discussion among Amoroim was said by Rav Malkiyot. And the way to remember that is that the Mishnah is always the queen, because you can always use a Mishnah or a Brisa to bring a proof against something that was said by someone just on their own. So that means the queen is always going to be the Malkiyah, which is more feminine than Malkiyot. And because of that, you'll remember that Rav Malkiyah always spoke about the Mishnah or the Brisa. And the only difference between Rav Papa and Rav Chanina ben Rav Ika is the question of the Shvachot. Because the Shvachot over here, this is not really so clear, because was it a switch of a from Mikla with Shvachot, or was it just a difference to the idea that we were talking about over here, which was the reference to the Mishnah about the number of shvachot that you bring in? That's a little bit of machlokas and even different pshatim that are mashman Rashi. But one thing is for sure, that the din of the shvachot is based on a Mishnah. And therefore, if you hold that Matnita Malkiyah, then it would have to be Rav Malkiyah and not Rav Malkiyot, as quoted above. Rav Shem ben Gamliel Omer. Now, we've got this other issue. And we have Rav Shem ben Gamliel saying, which seems to relate to the previous thing, that even if you made a neder that asers your wife from doing any kind of work, then you have to divorce her on the spot, and you have to pay her ksuv. Why? Because not doing things leads to she'imum, which is insanity. Now, I mean, these are two interrelated psakim. I mean, before we were saying that it would be Osir, according to Rabbi Elazar, because it brings, because it brings to Zima. And over here we're saying that just lying around on a TV chair brings to insanity. I mean, do I really care what the problem is? I mean, it's basically you can't do it because you're damaging your wife. So is there a real difference between Rav Papa and Rav Chanina Bereda Ravika? Between Rav Shimon Gamliel and Rav Eliezer, I mean, it seems to be the same. And it's the Gemara, it's not the same at all. Because Ika Benayu, Demitala La Biguriatia, Katinaita or Nadrashir. So if she plays bridge, I'm assuming Nadrashir means something like bridge. So if she plays bridge, so then at least she's going to be kept busy and won't go insane. But she certainly is not going to be kept away from sin. That I can guarantee you. And it's interesting. I met an almana this year who told me that she hated bridge and that her husband was dying of cancer. And he was like a major bridge player. And she said to me that he took her one day and he said, I am going to teach you bridge. Even though you don't like it, I'm going to turn you into a good bridge player because when I die, you're going to be very lonely. And anybody who plays bridge is never lonely. So this is mamish, this issue over here. I'm not sure what the case is in the first thing over here that she plays with little doggies. I don't know what that refers to, but I mean, I guess she's got some doggies to keep her busy. So also she's not going to go insane, which is very interesting. So the play, having a pet is going to keep you sane, but it's certainly not going to keep you from sin. So bridge and pups are useful as far as they go. Anyway, moving on now to Sir Richard. Well, she certainly doesn't have to do the wash if she has a washing machine. And she doesn't have to sweep the floor if she has a vacuum cleaner. She would still run them, right? It's interesting. I once had a story of my mother, Allah Shalom, where, you know, it was in the days before people had dishwashers. But like very rich people had dishwashers. So, and she had a bunch of kids, of girls who were still young enough to wash the dishes. So this lady comes in and is telling her, you know, wow, she's got this dishwasher machine. Oh, my mother says, I have four dishwashers. Four dishwashers? Gosh. Milchiks, Fleishiks, I guess for Pesach also Milchiks, Fleishiks. And she brings in her four daughters. So it's that kind of thing. Anyway, Sir Richard is ready. Apparently, yes. And the illness among South African women. You know, you have to make sure they're not sitting around in that easy chair watching TV. Keep them busy. So start with bridge, but you got to get beyond that. Okay. Now, suppose someone is madir et ishto mitashmish hamita. So, I mean, he cannot do that, obviously, because he's chayev to provide intimacy for his wife. So he can't aser his wife from being nehenate from his tashmish, obviously. But what he can do is he can aser himself. And if that's the case, then he's not going to be able to give her what she needs because he's going to be over on his neder. It's like the same thing somebody who makes a neder not to be neder from a sukkah. Obviously, he can't make a neder not to do a mitzvah, but he could become usher in the sukkah, and then he becomes an ones in the sukkah. What happens in such a case? Beit Shammai Omrim, well, for 2 weeks, he doesn't have to give her a get and a ksuvah. If he makes the neder for a 2 week period. Beis Hillel says for 1 week, he doesn't have to divorce her and give her a ksuvah. HaTalmidim yotzim leTalmud Torah shelo b'reshut 30 yom. However, it's mutter to leave your wife for 30 days to go for learning Torah, because that we assume is a given that women have taken upon themselves to see to it that even if she doesn't give permission, you have a right to go learn. HaPoalim, Shabbat Achat. And also, it's assumed that even somebody who is a Poel, that it's mutter every once in a while to go away. So over here, he would be allowed to go away for a week. Even though normally a Poel is supposed to provide his conjugal duties twice a week. HaOnah HaAmura BaTorah are basically hatayalin b'choyom, people that don't have much to do in life. The Gemara is going to discuss what that is. They have to actually sleep with their wives every day. Hapoalim shtayim b'shabbat, twice a week. people who are chamarim, and they drive away, so they only are around once a week. Gemalim, they go on these long desert journeys, so that's only once in 30 days. And sailors, they go away for a long time, once in 6 months. Divrei Rabbi Eliezer. So now, what would be the basis of the machlokas Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel about whether you need to divorce a woman who is not going to be able to be intimate with you after 2 weeks or after 1 week? Where does Beit Shammai get 2 weeks? They say, well, the Torah takes a woman away from her husband for 2 weeks if she has a female baby. So obviously that's not considered to be out of the range of normal. Whereas Beit Hillel says, but I mean, if you take a look at a male baby, then it would only be 1 week. Well, I understand. I mean, what's the point of looking at the male if there's also a female? So then Beit Hillel should also agree that we should learn it from a Yoledet Nekeva. That's true. If Beit Hillel was learning from Yoledet, the truth is he doesn't learn it from Yoledet at all. The real truth is that Beit Hillel is learning it from the din of Anida, which is actually only for 1 week. So why? What are they arguing in? Well, Beit Hillel holds, look, I mean, it often happens that people get into arguments with their wives, you know. So he's going to maybe asser himself for a week. That's a dover, that shchiach, that he's going to say, I don't have anything to do with you. So he answers himself. And that we should learn from something which happens all the time, namely that a woman gets a period. Whereas Beit Shammai holds something that he causes as a problem. He's the guy that made the neder. So that we should learn from something which he causes. He's the guy that got her pregnant. And therefore, we should learn it out of Yoledet. So since he causes her to not have relations with him upon birth, so he should be the one that has that period of time for when he causes her to be distant from him because of the neder. On my Rav, this machlokes between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel is only when the time period of the neder was stated along with the neder. Machloket be mefaresh, but if a guy just makes a neder that is open-ended, that I'm never going to have any pleasure from our relations, Bistam, everybody would agree you have to immediately give her ksuva. Whereas Shmuel says, no, because look, even though you left it open-ended, I mean, we give you time to figure out that you should go and find a petach to your neder that will allow you to go to a chacham and to be yotze from the neder. Says the Gemara, but why are Rav and Shmuel arguing about this again? I mean, we already had exactly the same achloket. We had this idea in the Mishnah later on that talks about somebody who makes a neder that his wife shouldn't get benefits from him in general, and he's badir et ishto milahanot lo ad shloshim yom. So ad shloshim yom, he's allowed to be Ma'amida Parnas. Gemara asks over there, obviously, what difference if he's Ma'amida Parnas, then he's going to be paying for the food. So how can he be Ma'amida Parnas if she's going to end up being netted from him? Then we'll talk about what this Parnas is. So as far as Hana'av support, you can have a Shliach give her Hana'av support. And but if it's more than 30 days, and there he expects her to be supported by an intermediary, that you have to divorce her and pay her ksuva. And the same machlokas we find over there. Rav says that's only if he put the time into the original neder, but if he left it open-ended, then he has to give her a divorce on the spot. And Shmuel says, even if he left it open-ended, Shema Yimtza Petach L'Nidro, says the same exact machlokas we have over here. I don't understand why are we making a big deal about it twice? Does the Gemara, it's not the same. Tzricha. Because let's say if we had the case of our Mishnah, where we're talking about the inability to have sexual relations, maybe that's why Rav says you have to give her a divorce right away, because we haven't figured out a way to hire somebody to give your wife sexual relations, and therefore there'd be no way to take your place by hiring a parnas. Majenkein, in that case, where you're talking about food, where it is efshur b'parnas, Maybe it would be made of the shmuel that it's not as acute, and therefore you don't have to provide the ketuvah on the spot. And on the other hand, if we only had the case over there, I would say, yeah, that's why Shmuel said that we give him time, even though he left it open-ended, because it's not critical. Masha Einkein, in this case, I mean, it is critical. You can't hire somebody to give her sex, and therefore maybe it would be made to Rav that you have to provide her ketuvah on the spot. Therefore, tzricha. Okay, Rabosai, lovely. Good to see you all and to thank you all for a wonderful morning of Teras Hashem Tamima, Mishivas Nafesh. Look forward to having the schus to do this yet again, Bezos Hashem, tomorrow with this miracle called life. Bezrat Hashem.